This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Welcome to the Dan Levitard Show. It's Stugatz, no Levitard, no Stugatz, rolling with us all week long. Peter Burns, Katie George, where we, today on our final day of filling in today, Katie, see if we can crack 28.5% approval rating from the Levitard and Stugatz army of listeners and the Reddit accounts over there. So I have talked to Felica about it. He has set the line. Do we crack 28.5%? It's an underdog right now. It's at plus 140 on the online sports book. No is sitting there at 170. So you can lay some good money. And I feel like we have the fate in our hands to determine that bet. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you? I think momentum's on our side. We've just like slowly been creeping up this mountain. And I think today's the day that we really win everyone over and we don't come back for tomorrow.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, and by the way, all the guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line here on the Dan Levitard Show. When you think about it, we have such really good topics today. Like, if you can't get a smile on your face on the topics that we have today, I don't know. We're never going to win you over. I mean, the Ryder Cup news, it's postponed. Stanford, well, hold on, they're canceling all of their sports for the fall, or a bunch of sports. Ohio State, they've actually paused their workouts. No fall football in the Ivy League. This is fun. If we can't have fun today, Katie George, in the world of sports, when the hell are we ever going to have fun?
I appreciate your positive approach here and that you want to say that this is fun to discuss, but every topic that you just named out is sad. I'm pessimistic, yes. And I need you to lift my spirits today. Lift my spirits and lift all those listening today. Lift our spirits, Peter Burns. That's what I challenge you to do today.
I will tell you this. I'll lift your spirits with this. Chris Cody changed me. Yesterday, we changed Chris Cody on this show because he had said that for the longest time in our poll results of bringing a shopping cart to its actual resting place in a parking lot after he goes to the supermarket, he says that he will change his behavior. On the flip side now, Chris Cody has decided to change my behavior as this morning, I took the dog out for a walk, had the poop bag in there, dog poops, I pick up the poop, clean transaction, I feel like a good human being. We continue to walk, dog decides to take the second poop. Neighbor is in the front yard.
Oh, no.
My wife is having a conversation with said neighbor. They're not looking at me. I kind of glanced at the poop, slowly walked over to the poop like I was actually going to pick it up, and did not actually do it. So, Chris Cody, if nothing else this week, you, my friend, have changed my behavior. I, Peter Burns, thank you for that, Chris.
Proud of you.
Yeah. Don't encourage this atrocious action. But I do wonder, Peter Burns, like, what do you do once your dog goes to the bathroom the first time and you've already tied off the bag, you know, because obviously you don't want to continue walking with that smell. You have to tie it off, right? It's like, what are you supposed to do?
I got to be honest with you. I feel like I did my due diligence as a human being for the first one. At the second one, I think that that's just something I can't control. That's fate, and then that's fertilizer at that point. Peter
so
Burns,
they
getting
both canceled each other out then, and you're still right. A terrible human being.
Yeah, I feel like if you do one good deed and you do one bad deed, at least at the end day, you end up being a negative. That's all I'm asking for. You can follow her on Twitter at Katie_George05, myself at Peter Burns, ESPN. But we do get into this, and I thought this was the interesting news. We had kind of talked about it earlier in the week about when will there be some cancellations in sports, right? We've seen it. Even though MLS is back playing their tournament right now, Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, college football trying to get it done. But the Ivy League, the Wicked Smart Kids up in the Ivy League part of the world, have decided that they're not going to. And Robin Harris, the executive director of everything over there in the Ivy League, had this to say about how they came to the conclusion of shifting sports not to the fall, but to the spring.
You know, it definitely wasn't any easier to make a second time because we had been through it once before. But we also know, again, that it's the right decision for our schools. And our presidents have been meeting and talking frequently. And a consistent theme throughout is they talked about how they were going to approach academics and campus life generally for the fall is obviously that our student athletes should be treated like students and that our campus policies for campuses or, you know, for the student body generally are going to apply to athletics. So as the Ivy League schools started to announce the policies for campuses during the fall, it became clear as a result of the varying campus policies across our schools that competition in athletics just wasn't going to be feasible.
We're going to speak with Heather Dennett. She's done, I think, a phenomenal job covering all of this and talking to a bunch of different presidents from universities, college coaches, athletic directors, just to gain knowledge on their confidence level and where they stand. And she was the one who had the conversation with Robin Harris, the executive director of the Ivy League. And the word that I keep getting hung up on throughout the article that I read that Heather posted on ESPN.com, you can go look at it now, is policies. Because Robin Harris continued to say, we made this decision based on the campus policies that were decided 2 weeks ago. And going through what the campuses had decided their policies were going to be in regards to the coronavirus, there was no way we could compete this fall and host sporting events this fall on campuses. I want to get the answer from Heather of what are some of those policies? Like, what policies did these Ivy League institutions put in place and therefore came to the conclusion that they're unable to compete in any form or fashion this semester? That's what I want to know.
Right. And we'll have Heather Dennett on here in about an hour and a half to discuss that. And one of the thing is that's interesting is that when you look at where the Ivy League schools are traditionally located, these are spots that were hit very hard, but also it also appears to be spots in which that there has been still a lot of social distancing, a lot of people wearing the mask, and that has kind of been brought down. I.e., on the opposite side of the country, you see a lot, especially in the southeast part of the world where we live at, and the fact that there has not been a taking this thing very seriously. And now, all of a sudden, they still are waiting to decide on what they're going to do in the college football season. Now, a lot of the headlines yesterday, Katie, were like, well, what is the domino effect? We talked about it on this show earlier this week. What's the domino effect when the Ivy League says this? Because they led the way in March Madness. Remember, they were the first basketball league to cancel their basketball tournament, and we all kind of looked at that going, all right, well, they must know something. It is interesting now about how everyone followed their recommendation for basketball, yet for football, not so fast. Bobby Carpenter had this to say about potentially why all these other conferences aren't so quick to act on what the Ivy League did yesterday.
College athletics is a single-income family, and football is that single income. And, you know, talking to some people at Ohio State and going through it, I mean, football accounts for really $150 to $160 million, really the entire budget. So you wipe that out, there's not going to be any sports the rest of the year. Like, and that just isn't Ohio State. Ohio State's similar to Stanford. They had 36 varsity sports. And so if you eliminate that, like, there's not going to be any sports the rest of the year. And if that's happening at places like Ohio State and Stanford, it's going to be happening definitely at places that aren't as financially solvent as some of these big Power Five schools.
So that was Bobby Carpenter basically saying the part out loud to everyone, going, if you don't have college football for the majority of these schools, it's wiped out. It's everything. And while some of the Power Five schools, you're there in Louisville, I cover all the schools here in the SEC, while they do have rainy day funds, they may be able to get by the blip for 1 year, but what happens to the Miami of Ohio's? What happens to the Louisiana Techs, the Southern Misses, the Utah States of the world that don't have these monster Power Five television deals, Katie? If college football is not played this year, it could potentially be the shuttering of college sports as we know it. Legitimately, as we know it. So fun to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed here on the Dan Le Batard Show this morning, Katie. But is that fair to say that that's why this decision is at least being pushed back another 3-4 weeks right now?
Yeah, it's absolutely fair. I mean, you and I are both collegiate athletes, former collegiate athletes who played sports that didn't generate revenue for our universities. So we would be the first on the chopping block, right, of sport teams to go within athletic departments. So this is a huge deal. I mean, you mentioned Miami of Ohio, Louisiana Tech, Samford. Think about Stanford. Not Samford, Stanford. Stanford just cut 11 sports. 11 sports because in part the coronavirus pandemic and in part other reasonings that they were going to be in the red. And so now they're trying to make budget cuts where they see fit so that they can limit some of that. And that's the scary part for me, because if you don't play college football, you're not going to have a lot of other sports anywhere else across the country. If Stanford's doing it, you know it's coming down the pipeline for many others. And that, to me, is a daunting, daunting reality.
By the way, I didn't know that they had 36 varsity sports. That's why they win this Director's Cup of, like, the most successful university of all time. Like, they've had 36 of them. They've won it 25 straight years, right? So part of the squash and the lightweight rowing and the synchronized swimming programs, they have been cut from their program. We'll talk to actually Pat Forty about that a little bit later. Also, more on Ohio State pausing their workouts, their voluntary workouts for the college football season. But right now, more just happy news in the world of sports, Katie George.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get a good, happy, feel-good SportsCenter update.
Oh, I enjoy working with you. Steven Jackson apologized Wednesday night for using what he said was the wrong words in defending DeSean Jackson. But the former NBA player told CNN that what he said a day earlier should not be misinterpreted as support for anti-Semitism. Amazon announced on Wednesday that it will be removing Washington Redskins merchandise for sale while the team considers a name change. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Chris Cody, that was a depressing SportsCenter update. Not because of your read, Katie. I thought you nailed the read just because of everything we had to do in the first 10 minutes of the show. I see in the show chat, do you have good news? Is this breaking news? Do you have a scoop? Or is this like public knowledge to at least save the environment of that SportsCenter update?
I am reporting that Tiger Woods just tweeted out that he's playing the Memorial next week.
Oh, so this is like you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, and it was by somebody, and then Michael Scott signs it at the end of the office. I like that. Chris Cody is reporting that Tiger Woods has tweeted that he's playing in the Memorial next week. That is actually great news. All right, that's the way that we'll end this. All right, coming up, I've got a Tiger Woods story I may or may not tell on the story on this show a little bit later. She is Katie George. I am Peter Burns, and this is the Dan Le Batard Show. Jessica Rabbit. I'm going to have to go back and watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's been a moment. Do we think that still holds up after time? I'm not quite sure. I don't think it does. Guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Performance or Pennzoil Performance line. We're going to be joined by Pat Forty here momentarily on that. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils made from natural gas. Unbeatable engine protection. Proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Now time for Katie George's SportsCenter update.
Steven Jackson apologized Peter Wednesday night for using what he said were the wrong words in defending DeSean Jackson, but the former NBA player told CNN that what he said a day earlier should not be misinterpreted as support for anti-Semitism. Stanford will cut 11 of its varsity programs at the conclusion of the 2020-21 academic year as it deals with the ongoing financial ramifications of the coronavirus pandemic, including men's and women's fencing, field hockey, lightweight rowing, men's rowing, co-ed and women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, and wrestling. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Thank you, Katie George. Peter Burns in here on the Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gotts and joining us on that Shell Pennzoil Performance line. You can follow him on Twitter at ByPat40, one of my favorite guys in the sports media industry from Sports Illustrated. Pat, how big was this news from Stanford yesterday on the reduction in cutting 11 of their varsity sports?
I think it was big, Peter. You know, this is the gold standard for broad sports excellence in America. Stanford's won 25 straight Director's Cups, is the best all-around athletic program in the country. And they just took out 30% of those programs. And while they probably had too many sports with 36 to sustain with a budget that's not one of the biggest out there, it still, I think, gives almost a warning shot to everybody else about how bad this situation is and probably will continue to get. But also, I think it provides almost cover for other schools to say, well, if Stanford can cut them, so can we. And I think we're going to see more cuts happening.
Pat, you have children who are student-athletes, collegiate athletes. How did these kids find out the news that their sports were getting cut, and how did these coaches and assistant coaches find out that they would not be coaching at Stanford any longer?
Yeah, I do. I have a daughter who's at Stanford. As a matter of fact, she's a swimmer. Her program is okay, Katie. But, from what I gathered, there was a hastily convened Zoom call meeting, and Bernard Muir got on and basically talked to the affected athletes and coaches for about 5 minutes and told them
the grim news. And then after that, after they were informed, there was an email sent out to all athletes, and the news was purveyed from there. But I mean, I think it came as a profound shock to everyone. Certainly, there had been indications that budgets were being cut, belts were being tightened. But I would imagine that the athletes that were suddenly had their careers turned upside down, 240 of them and 22 coaches. The coaches may have seen it coming, but the athletes probably didn't.
Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated joining Peter Burns and Katie George here on the Dan Le Batard Show. Pat, how much of this do you firmly believe was impending, you know, not getting the money from NCAA March Madness and impending what they think is may not be at least a well-attended college football season? Or, hey, this is the cover if we were ever going to lose these sports that were just kind of loss leaders for the university, it's time to do it right here, right now?
Oh, probably some of both, I would say. You know, somebody told me back in April, a Power 5 athletic director, looking at the non-Power 5 schools that were cutting sports, they're saying that if they're cutting them now in April, that they were already planning on cutting them or wanted to cut them. And now, you know, here is at least an explanation, if not an outright excuse, for doing so. And I would say with Stanford, with some of these programs, that's probably the case, is that, again, you know, the Pac-12 revenue is not Big Ten revenue. It's not SEC revenue. Stanford does not necessarily fund its sports the way a lot of other Power 5 programs do. They're good at the sports because athletes naturally want to go there because they have good coaches, because they have good facilities. But they don't spend very lavishly. They run a pretty tight ship. And they're probably looking and saying, okay, we've got six sports here that don't even have NCAA championships. Why are we having those? And it was a good cover, I guess you would say, to eliminate them.
Pat, sadly, this was not the only story that broke in regards to college athletics yesterday. The Ivy League announced that it will play no varsity sports for the rest of the calendar year. We just found out that Ohio State, who has so many programs in itself, paused voluntary workouts for seven of those programs. What's your confidence level that college athletics will resume this fall, let alone college football?
Not high. Yesterday was a very bad day. I said in my column it was the worst day since the worst day, which was March 12th when they shut down everything. And I think this was a warning shot that we're heading towards a similar situation for the fall. That if you know, people will push the football to the logical limit, I think, trying to play. Most power conferences will. And a lot of the dates that I have heard is August 1st. Or sometimes similar to that. They want to try to get, you know, full-scale team activities going, like at least for a couple of weeks, to see how that's going to go, to see if they could possibly pull this off. But I think a lot of people are surveying the landscape, and especially yesterday, and saying, we're throwing a Hail Mary here at best to try to have fall sports.
Pat, what happens at that point? Let's say that we get in here, fall sports does not happen. College football, they keep pushing it back, doesn't happen. They get into spring and hell, the vaccine is not here, and really it's difficult to even have a spring season. I mean, we already know what the Trevor Lawrences of the world, the Justin Fields, anybody that's pretty draft eligible and first rounder, they're gone. But what happens to the college athletics landscape? Does it just evaporate overnight?
Well, it would be absolutely devastating. I mean, if there is no football at all, you know, not even a spring season, and I've had people tell me, look, even at best, a spring season is going to be 6 to 9 games. It's not going to be 12. It's not going to be, you know, 8 home games for schools that want that revenue. I mean, it would just be absolutely devastating. I don't think it ends college sports, but it fundamentally weakens college sports as we know it. You know, that, I mean, the football revenue engine has just driven the bus for so long and to such an extent that we've seen such, you know, wild spending and staff increases and everything that you could, you know, are you going to be able to deconstruct all of that? Do you want to? I don't know. And if in the process of making those decisions, okay, no, we don't want to deconstruct the football monolith, then everything else has to go. So, I mean, we're looking at some extremely difficult decisions upcoming, if and when we get to a point of, at best, I think maybe, you know, a conference-only season or a spring season or no season.
Okay, let me bring it back a little bit and say that they're still trying to work through this fall scenario of playing football in the fall or playing sports in the fall on college campuses. Pat, what happens if the student body at some of these schools is not asked back to campus and the presidents decide we're going to move and continue all online courses, stay in your hometowns, stay safe wherever you are, but you are not being asked to come back to campus? Can sports justify playing in that landscape?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think most places, again, they're going to try, you know, a kind of a hybrid model of class attendance, and they want students on campus for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, you know, college without students on campus is no good. It's not necessarily terrible, but it's nowhere near the experience it should be. And two, they want the housing money. So there, you know, there's a couple of incentives there to have students around. But if you have no students on campus and you're going to try to sell the idea of, we're just going to have 400 athletes and they're going to keep going and they're going to play, that is not going to fly. That ship will not sail. So if it comes to that, if we get to a point where a bunch of schools say we just can't have on-campus classes, those schools are also going to say we cannot have varsity sports in the fall.
The kicker of this article, and one of the reasons why you're one of the best in the business, Pat, you said this, and it said, one of the oldest sayings in sports is to respect your opponent. America didn't respect COVID-19, not enough to say quarantine and wear a mask and do what it had to do. Complacency, arrogance, stubbornness did not get the job done, and now the increasingly costly bills for the disrespect are coming due. And you can't say it any better than that. Pat, we got to roll. Thank you so much for the time. Y'all be safe out there and hope to, hopefully maybe we're talking football next time we talk.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay, that would be great. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Katie.
There it is, Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated joining us. Katie George, what do we got right now?
Well, as you get back to business, Granger wants to remind you that small things can make a big difference, like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. And as always, Granger is there to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guides, and more. It's part of their commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Learn more by visiting Granger.com/recovery. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Peter Burns, Katie George here on the Dan Le Batard Show. Coming up next, it is Tom Hanks' birthday and why O.J. Simpson ruined it. I'll explain next here on Le Batard. You know, for the longest time before having kids, I didn't think that was a real thing. That whenever you would get in trouble, I thought my parents were the only ones who would say, Peter Joseph Burns, what are you thinking? And now I realize as a father, I use it all the time. For my daughter, Bo Victoria, when you hear the middle name. Or Katie Evelyn George, whenever I use that, that's name. When you know things. Is that not your middle name? What is
Evelyn?
Your middle name? I thought that. Yeah.
We're not doing this. Nope.
I swear to God, I thought your middle name was Evelyn. How the hell did I get Evelyn George?
Because Mike A., our producer on Sunday, calls me Catherine Evelyn or something. Like I call you Peter McKenzie Burns, and that's not your middle name.
This is awkward. I did not know that. Luckily, you're not offended. Peter Burns, Katie, not Evelyn George here. Remember, guests on the Dan Le Batard Show up here via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Soccer is back. No middle names there on ESPN+, Serie A, FA Cup, MLS, and more. Original series, studio shows, 30 for 30 documentary, all in HD on your favorite device. The beautiful game lives on ESPN+. Sign up today at ESPNplus.com. We'll be joined by Taylor Zarzer here on that Pennzoil Performance Line right after the SportsCenter update from Katie Victoria George?
That's not it either. Dang. Amazon, Peter McKenzie Burns, announced on Wednesday that it will be removing Washington Redskins merchandise for sale while the team considers a name change. When asked on a conference call whether he would play or not, J.J. Watt said, I don't think we're at a point yet where people are making that decision because we don't have enough information yet to be making decisions like that. So I think that is a very fluid process, and I think it keeps coming up. Obviously, the report date gets closer and closer, but as of right now, we really don't have enough information to make a decision like that. That's what I would say. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
On the next SportsCenter update, can we just find some glimmer of good news? I don't care how small it is. I don't care if like a 12-year-old like learned to ride their bike for the first time. If we can get like just one small nugget in the SportsCenter update that's positive, that would be awesome. Joining us right now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, runs PGA Tour Radio for SiriusXM, one of my best friends, and also college football for ESPN. He is Taylor Zarzer. And Taylor, right now, give me something positive about college football. Like I know Ohio State paused their stuff. I know Ivy League's looking back for the spring. Give me something positive in the world of college football, what you're looking forward to.
Oh, man, that is a tough question. I would say just how desperate we are and to get it back. The anticipation is always so high because the off season seems longer than any other major sport has in the calendar. And I think that this year, just given all that we're going through, how divided we are, how remote we are, unconnected, if you will, in that I think that it's made us want college football, at least as much as I can ever remember in my life. So I guess that's the biggest positive, is just that, guess what? The truth is we all really, really love college football.
Here's something positive. Take a spin with me on this. Change the way I think, Taylor, about Bryson DeChambeau. I know nothing about this guy, and then my feed all of a sudden on Twitter is just meme after meme after meme of this kid bulking up. And then I follow the tournament last weekend. I see that he has a conversation with the cameraman, and then I actually listen to the comments he made after the third round about how cameramen shouldn't film vulnerable situations that happen on the course. If I'm judging Bryson DeChambeau, tell me why I shouldn't and why he's a good person and somebody to root for.
Well, I'm not sure I can. I've spent a lot of time around the guy, and the guy is obsessed with the figuring out things that no other golfer has before, and candidly, he's obsessed with himself. I mean, this guy is all about self-improvement every single day, and it has come at the expense of relationships, whether it's been in his own life, you know, off the golf course or on the golf course. It's not kind of like Patrick Reed, where the guy just constantly makes the wrong decision or does something that angers everybody. He's just so in his own lane that I think that it's frustrated a lot of other people, and certainly what happened last week as he went on his way to win in Detroit was something that was totally uncalled for. And I can't find anyone that I connect with that's a player on the tour or that is in somehow involved with the PGA Tour that defended how he handled that situation. I mean, I've talked to guys that have won a number of PGA tournaments, Hall of Famers, that were outraged by the way that he acted and don't think that anybody's above the game, and you hit a bad shot, hey, them the breaks. So that was a poor look. I mean, Bryson, I think down deep is a good guy that once you're around him, as is the case with most people that are misunderstood, you see that, you know, he's got similar interests that you do. It's just he comes off so strong every time you're around him. And I'm a bull in a china shop. I'm here to dominate, not really care what anybody else thinks. And then after a while, I think you see that the guy, you know, does genuinely care about others and care about the game. But Katie, that would take a long time, I think, in order for you to change your mind. I think it would for most people right now.
Is that the same thing that people said about Peter Burns during his collegiate golf career?
Oh, I was very punchable. I had puka shell necklaces, I think, at some point. I think I did the sun in my hair, which is probably comes to no shock of anybody who's been listening to that, where it kind of like blondes your hair, but it just turned
We know
orange.
What it is.
Very
we know
punchable
what it is.
At that point, Taylor.
Maybe by his late 30s into his 40s, like once he becomes married and has children, all of a sudden he'll become like the most approachable, fun-loving guy in the world, like PB has. But he is in his mid-20s. It's interesting, Katie, because Rory McIlroy, 6 years ago, after he won his last major championship, the PGA Championship, I did an interview with him afterwards, and he said, "Golf is the most important thing to me in the world right now." 6 years later, Rory is ranked number one in the world, and it is not the most important thing. His wife is the most important thing. And certainly becoming a father in the near future is a very important thing. He loves golf. He loves his job, but he's not in the same place he was 6 years ago. Bryson is exactly where Rory was 6 years ago. He could care less about anything else other than dominating the game. This week, he is in Denver working out at some facility, trying to get even stronger after the 50 pounds he's already gained in the last year, to try to get even more club head speed and more power for next week's tournament, the Memorial Tournament there in Ohio. So this guy is not interested in anything other than domination on the golf course at the moment.
But at this point, has anybody ever been great and not just been kind of an SOB? I mean, you look at Jordan at the top of his game. You look at now, of course, Tiger. Just the stories about Tiger when he was at in the 2000s, is just killing the golf world. He was that guy. I mean, has there ever been a very extremely likable number one golfer or a guy on that quest for it, Taylor? I don't know.
I think Rory's that guy, Peter. I think he has become kind of the spokesman for the PGA Tour in the last year or two. Anytime there's a hot button issue, whether it's golf related or not, everyone comes to Rory and he gives you a thoughtful answer. And he is extremely well liked by everyone out there. I think it's kind of taken a little bit of time for that to happen, but he is. He's number one in the world. And I think that there are other golfers. And Arnold Palmer was the ultimate, and obviously that was 60 years ago. But without him, I don't think the game of golf would be anywhere close to where it is today. And he is the most beloved player probably in the history of the game. And there weren't rankings then, but there was no question going into the 1960s, Arnold Palmer was the best player in the sport. So there are a couple of examples. But to your point, yeah, I think it takes a tremendous amount of cockiness. It is the ultimate individual sport, so you have to have this opinion of yourself that is so high, and sometimes that can rub people the wrong way.
Taylor, as we were coming onto the show, we got word that Tiger Woods is playing in the Memorial next weekend. How excited are you to see him back on the course, and what led to this decision for him to get back out?
Well, a couple of things, Katie. First of all, I'm excited because he looks as healthy as I can remember. This guy has gone through so many injuries and probably will still battle his body in the years to come. But just watching him at the match last month, or I guess, yeah, more than a month now, when he played with Phil and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, that's as good as I've seen Tiger physically look and hit the golf ball in a long time. And keep in mind, he won the Masters and won a tournament in Japan last year, and he didn't look as good then to me as he does now. He sent out some videos on social media hitting shots in recent weeks, and he still looks that healthy. So I'm excited. I think this guy, even though he hasn't battled for four straight days on the tour, is going to get right back in there and be competitive, because I think his talent is unmatched in the history of the game. In terms of why it's taken this long for him to come back, I think he's looking forward at how bundled the schedule is going to be because of the pandemic. He's going to have to play three FedEx Cup playoff events in August, a PGA Championship in August, and then you've got the U.S. Open in September and the Masters in November. So with all of that golf that's in front of him, typically in a time of the year that he doesn't play much, I think that's why he's been very cautious coming back and he's waited this long.
We're going to see patrons in Augusta this year, you think?
Man, my crystal ball every day, Peter, tells me something different. I'm obviously just desperate for college football this year. Love being part of those games. So fulfilling to go into those stadiums and SEC stadiums and see them packed on Saturdays. So I'm remaining hopeful that happens, and I think that in a similar way, the Masters, there's no better sporting event, at least for me, to go to each year. And what makes it so great is that there aren't electronic scoreboards. You don't have your cell phone, and the crowd tells you who just made a birdie. You all look around at each other and say, oh, that's a Tiger roar. Oh, that's a Rory roar. Oh, that's a Phil roar. And that's what's so special about that place. And to not have that at Augusta National would be so surreal. All of this is so surreal, but that would certainly, in all of sports, I think be one of the strangest feelings to not have those roars at Augusta National. So, I mean, we have a lot of time, right? Three, 4 weeks ago, I think all of us would be sitting here saying, oh, we're headed in the right direction. We're gaining on this. Fall looks great. Who knows where we're going to be 3 or 4 weeks from now? So hopefully everyone's wearing a mask that's listening to us right now, and we'll be in a better place in a few weeks.
Last question for Taylor Zarzur, joining us here, Peter Burns, Katie George, and the Dan Lebatard Show. The only thing that would be weirder than not having patrons at Augusta would be a Ryder Cup without fans. And I think that was a pretty big change. How does that affect? I mean, what were your thoughts on the postponement of that?
Well, first of all, it brings back memories of your behavior at the last time we had a Ryder Cup on American soil, where everyone was losing their minds in Minnesota. It's the right decision for the reasons you just referenced. The Ryder Cup, I think, requires fans. It's just as the years have gone on, it's been the ultimate team experience in golf, and there really aren't any others. I mean, President's Cup does a very good job of trying to mimic that, but the Ryder Cup is in its own lane, and so it's just, you know, and the other thing is the team aspect, where you bring your family, you bring your loved ones, you bring your brother, your sister, you bring the people that care most about you to the actual event, and not to be able to bring that traveling party with the team, I think, was also a factor, and they made the right move to back it up a year, hopefully. When we're in September 2021, we'll be in a much better place. But I know that the finances certainly are an issue, but I think ultimately in terms of the interest level and for all those participating, it's the right move to wait till next year to go to Wisconsin, and hopefully everybody's fired up and they're able to be there on the property.
Isn't there more to this story, though, outside of Peter's just bizarre, reckless behavior as a fan?
There is much more to the story, Katie.
We don't need to talk about this.
No,
yeah,
we're going to talk about it, Taylor. I thought so. He just confirmed it.
We are up against a break. We have to go.
How convenient.
We cannot confirm any of that. Taylor Zarzer joining us. Hey, great stuff. Hopefully we are listening to you on the calls for college football here coming up this fall. Talk to you later, bud.
Thanks, Dave.
Robert Taylor Zarzer, and I'm pretty certain you need to refer to her as Catherine, not Katie Evelyn, but Catherine fill in the blank George.
There it is. It does seem regal, right? There seems to be like this Instagram model wave that she used to do.
Okay. Bye, Taylor. Thank you for joining us.
Peter Burns, Katie George. Katie, what do we all got?
Well, as we get back to business, Grainger wants to remind you that small things can make a big difference, like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. And as always, Grainger is there to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guides, and more. It's part of their commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Learn more by visiting Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger for the ones who get it done.
Thank you, Katie George. Follow us on Twitter, Katie_George05, myself at Peter Burns, ESPN. And no, you're not going to get that story, Katie, because the statute of limitations has not gone by.
What?
This is the Dan Le Batard Show. Guests of the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Remember, UFC heads the Fight Island. Title fight triple header, UFC 251, available exclusively on ESPN Plus. Subscribers $64.99. Going to be joined by Heather Dinich right now. We're going to get SportsCenter in a little bit, Katie, but I went long in telling my Tiger Woods story. I'm going to get to the punchline here momentarily, but I couldn't wait because I do want to get to Heather here. Heather Dinich, huge news yesterday. Ivy League decides, whoa, we're not playing in the fall. How big of a gut punch was this for people who want to see sports in the fall?
Well, I don't necessarily think, to be quite honest with you, that the decision makers at the Power Five level were looking at this as something that is going to influence how they make their decisions. Are they paying attention to it? Absolutely. Is every president at universities across the United States paying attention to what the president at Harvard says? You better believe it, right? But at the same time, I think that they're going to draw their own conclusions, and it's just an entirely different monster when you're talking about Power Five football versus FCS football as far as financials and everything.
Heather, you have a great article up on ESPN.com right now divulging and breaking down the conversation you had with the executive director of the Ivy League, Robin Harris. She kept referring to campus policies as being one of the main reasons why they decided that there won't be college athletics played in the fall. What are some of those campus policies that were decided a couple of weeks ago up at Ivy League institutions?
Right. So the eight schools have decided things like travel restrictions for students, faculty, and staff, which also obviously includes student-athletes and coaches. There are also very stringent social distancing measures in place at almost all of those campuses, if not all of them. And, you know, restrictions on visitors. Think about how many people, friends and family members, come to see athletes play, as well as the number of people who can gather at this point. Some campuses have it limited to 25 to 50 people, which certainly isn't very conducive for fall competition. So those things are what Robin Harris told me collectively made it what she called impractical to have fall competition.
Heather Dinich, our college football insider, joining us here on the Dan Le Batard Show with Peter Burns and Katie George. Speaking of college football and college football playoff, you've got a good relationship with Bill Hancock. How much has he weighed in on this? Because Obviously, they're the end-all, be-all at the end, the four-game playoff. What has he said about how they're monitoring the developments of college football?
He has not weighed in at all, honestly, in terms of the court of public opinion, right? Behind the scenes, I'm sure he's talking to the commissioners. But what he has told me is that whatever comes down, the playoff will be ready for it. And he has been extremely reluctant to get into hypothetical situations or various models that everybody else is talking about. But he did say repeatedly, whatever comes down, the CFP will be ready for it.
Heather, over the last couple of weeks, Brian Windhorst has weighed in on what percentage he thinks that the NBA will get games going down in Orlando, and then if a champion will be crowned. Buster Olney did the same for the MLB. What percentage do you believe, I won't ask you, somebody will be crowned at the end of the season, just what percentage do you think that we're at this point, that college football or college athletics will be played in the fall in the FBS?
I think the teams that can play will play, but as we sit here today, I think it's extremely less likely that you're looking at an on-time start. So I would say it's a greater than 50% chance right now that teams try to play in some form or fashion. But I mean, I hung up with Jack Swarbrick, Notre Dame's athletic director, 10 minutes before talking to you guys, and he said he thinks it's less likely that there's an on-time start. So I'll go with what he said, guys.
So you're saying Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick has said that the idea of starting on time is virtually unrealistic at this point?
He said it's less likely. He said, I am more pessimistic now than I was two weeks ago. He thinks it's less likely that there's an on-time start.
We saw that Harvard has decided for all undergraduates they'll continue their education through online courses. I've got cousins that attend SEC schools. There have been surveys sent out to parents at various schools of, do you feel comfortable sending your kids back to campus this fall? Heather, what happens if presidents decide, hey, students are going to stay at their homes, we're going to continue with this online education process? Can athletics make the justification that they should be on campus and continue to play when the student body won't be on campuses in the fall, if that comes to fruition?
It depends on if they are completely off campus. I talked to Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott recently, and his son goes to USC, which also said that they're going to mainly online courses. So as a commissioner of the Pac-12 and as a parent, he gets this letter in the mail, and his son, he told me, he's a rising junior in communications and marketing, and you know, he's going to be able to go on campus for some things. They're going to be able to go on campus for labs. So Larry is obviously hoping that if some students can go on campus for some things, athletics can be included in that. So I think that you have to sort through the weeds of, well, what exactly can students go on campus for? If there's no student access on campus whatsoever, not even for labs or anything like that, then I think it becomes a lot more difficult for athletic administrators to justify having student athletes back.
We live in a developing episode of a 30 for 30 being written in front of our eyes every single day. And Heather Dennis is right in the forefront regarding college football. Follow her on Twitter at CFB Heather. Let's talk some football of actually happening, hopefully, next time we speak. All right.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
There it is. Heather Dennis joining us here. Peter Burns, Katie George on the Dan Lebatard Show. Welcome back, Dan Lebatard Show. Peter Burns, Katie George. Don't worry, last hour, you got to hang out with us all week long. It'll be all right. You'll get actual talent, at least Clinton Lee Yates and Jen Latta will be anchoring the ship tomorrow. You won't have to be stuck with me. You'll miss Katie, I guarantee you that. Remember, guests on the Dan Lebatard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Katie George, SportsCenter update. Let's roll.
Well, Pete, Amazon announced on Wednesday that it will be removing Washington Redskins merchandise for sale while the team considers its name change. Stanford will cut 11 of its varsity programs at the conclusion of the 2020-21 academic year as it deals with the ongoing financial ramifications of the coronavirus pandemic, including men's and women's fencing, field hockey, lightweight rowing, men's rowing, co-ed and women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, and wrestling. And finally, it would take more than 700 quintillion packets of Kool-Aid and 35 quadrillion metric tons of sugar to turn the Earth's ocean into cherry Kool-Aid. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into Sports Center on ESPN Radio all day long.
By the way, how much better are the Sports Center updates when we just like put in some random fact? When there's no really good news in the world of sports, like just having someone put just something that
content
you learn.
Content Chris. Coming in for you. Okay, I have some questions, Peter Burns.
Okay, go ahead.
When Lee Westwood open mouth kissed Tiger, did he kiss
Hold
Tiger?
Hold on, for those of you just joining us on the Dan Levitard Show, that's a strong intro here. Maybe just another affiliate caught us in. You might have missed part of the story. Katie.
That's a good point. That's fair.
Can you imagine walking in and go, let's get back to Lee Westwood open mouth kissing Tiger Woods? So for those who missed it, I told a very long-winded story about how I snuck into the Ryder Cup party in Hazeltine, and I went into the European team party, found my way into the American party, and then Lee Westwood comes out and open-mouth kisses Tiger Woods in front of a small group of people. The craziest night of my life. Easy to say that. Yes, Katie.
My question is, did he kiss Tiger on the mouth, like on Tiger's mouth, or did like Tiger turn and he got like a lot of the cheek, or?
Well, no, it was mouth to mouth. So because what happened is they were so close because they were mouthing off to each other. No pun intended.
It's a lot
of
mouths.
They felt like it was like. It was like B Rabbit and everybody in 8 Mile when they were battle rapping like in each other's face. Like I thought they were going to fight. That's why I had my phone out. I thought that, hey, at some point, this is going to break out. And it didn't. So that's why Tiger was not ready for said kiss from Lee Westwood. And it did indeed happen.
You said Lee grabbed him at the nape of the neck, behind his neck, and pulled him in for this open mouth kiss.
Yes.
Was it like aggressive? Do we think that that could have led to some of Tiger's injury issues with his neck? I mean, he's like fragile up in that region.
We were good because this is when he was back and fully healthy. So I do feel like at some point everybody was feeling good in that room. So everybody was a little bit more relaxed at that point. So yes, no neck injuries from Tiger in the kiss.
Another question that I wrote down here.
You
took a whole
questions.
Yeah, I did actually in the break because I didn't want to forget any of them. You took a whole segment, which is about like 10 minutes, to get us to the point where you got to the USA team's room, and we got cut short, and so you had to tease, and then we interviewed Heather Dennett, who was amazing, and then we came back for a shortened segment that only lasted us like a minute and a half, and you were able to retell the story and the punchline all within 90 seconds, and I'm just curious if maybe we could have just gotten that 90-second spiel first time out of the gate and weed out some of the unnecessary details.
I understand you wanted to edit me, and that's fine. I felt like a storyteller. That's why people want creative choice and creative control over their stories, right? Like, no, everybody gets upset when they sell their story and they can't able to sell it. But yes, potentially I could have done it 8 minutes less. It's tough to tell a story.
And it is.
Honestly,
I agree.
To tell that story, I think that I feel like to see if someone can do it better, I believe that there's a story here on the Dan Levitard Show that needs to be told as well, too. I'm hearing rumors of an adventure, like a Choose Your Own Adventure book thing that went down at Dan's wedding. Who's going to tell the story here? Billy?
All right,
Anthony?
Tony. Tony's got it.
We're all three of us are actually entrenched in this story at different times, so we're almost going to tell it non-linear, okay? So Chris and I, obviously we've had a couple. It's open bar at Dan's wedding. We're having a great time. It's a who's who of ESPNers, of a lot of great people. One person in particular who's obviously no longer with the company, Dan Patrick, Chris and I see him at a distance, and this is probably, what, Chris, like maybe 3, 4, 5 hours into the open bar and the festivities of the party.
All right, so you're feeling loose.
We've had our fair share. Yes, we've had our fair share. We see Dan Patrick. Chris and I lock eyes. We're like, how can we get over to Dan Patrick, introduce us and ourselves as Dan Levitard's Danettes instead of his Danettes, and we go over there and talk to him, chop it up with him for a little bit. And in that time, we see Billy and his beautiful wife. They're standing there kind of in the middle between us and Dan Patrick. So we kind of mosey on over to Billy.
Billy carved a great space about four feet right next to
the
Dan
scout.
Patrick.
Billy was the scout team of the Dan Patrick confrontation. Got it.
This is all a very flattering version of what actually happened. So Chris and Anthony were buzzing around the entire night. Chris more so than Anthony, that I could tell. Anthony was kind of calm and cooler about trying to talk to as many famous people as possible. Chris, you would see, like, because it was more of like a buffet style thing where you would sit down and choose your tables. But Chris's family is friends with Dan, so he was sitting with his family. So you could tell he didn't love his seating placement in terms of proximity to celebrity, right? So you would see when people would get there, Chris would kind of just dart from side to side, heading towards, you know, like the Minas of the world or Dominique Fox or Pablo or whoever. But Dan Patrick was someone who was in the cool table. And Chris was not in the cool table. So Chris didn't get the opportunity to interact with him. So this was later on after the dinner was done. There was music playing and everyone was just kind of hanging out, mingling, whatever. Me and my wife went to the back bar, which is where Dan Patrick was talking to, you know, someone that he used to work with, a colleague, whoever it was, right? A former colleague. And we were just, you know, getting a drink by the bar. But we were standing there. I wasn't going to bother Dan Patrick. I don't need to say, hey, Dan Patrick, I'm Billy. I'm producer for Dan. Whatever, right? I would be awkward doing that. I didn't want to do that. Lo and behold, moments later, Chris and Anthony, for the first time in the night, show interest in speaking to me and are talking to me and my wife. And I immediately realize after a couple, like, you know, just small talk pleasantries, that they're not even looking at us while they're talking to us. They're looking behind me. So I realize what's going on here. They're just trying to find a way to get to Dan Patrick. So I tell Chris, I go, because he's like, I just want to talk to Dan Patrick, whatever. How do you think I should do it? I go, if you really want to get in with Dan Patrick or you want to have like an epic moment, you should do a shot with him. And the perfect way to get him to do a shot, it isn't going to be, hey, I'm Chris Cody. I want to do a shot. What you need to do is you need to go get Stugatz and you need to get him to come to the bar because Dan Patrick will do a shot with Stugatz because Stugatz will not take no for an answer and he'll just order 1,000 shots and just hand them out.
No, we're doing a shot. We're doing a shot. Yes.
Exactly. So you need to go get Stugatz and then talk him into doing, because Stugatz will do a shot with Dan Patrick for the story also. So they went and they got Stugatz to come over, and then they got the shot situation to happen where they're handing it out to everyone and Dan Patrick's part of it. And then they did not leave Dan Patrick's side for at least 45 minutes.
I juggled for him. I'm a juggler. I know how to juggle.
No,
I juggled for Dan Patrick.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
No, but
wait a minute.
Yes.
You got to the point where you were such a hanger-on that you had run. At what point does the juggling skill of this 45-minute, this can't be right off the top, right? This isn't your first, were you running out of material? How did the juggling thing come about?
I think there was a bowl, you know, decorative bowl of just fruit.
I think.
So I was just like, you know, it's just like, I just happened to start juggling two balls with one hand, and I'm just like, you know.
As one casually does, I just started juggling two balls.
But to jump in on what Billy said, though, what we did, we used Billy as a lily pad. That's called the lily pad technique, where we jumped to Billy, and then we were like, all right, we got to get over to Dan Patrick, and then it was a great shot. We got everybody involved. It was great.
So speaking of this shot, what was it that you felt was worthy of handing to Dan Patrick?
It was tequila.
Okay.
It was a tequila shot that we all shared with each other.
No,
there was no lime.
It was a shot of embarrassment, is what it was.
I was going to say,
I juggled the lime.
Let me ask you this: the shot story, I don't care about. I'm wondering, Tony, at some point, did you see Chris starting to juggle, and did you stay with the juggling exhibition that was going on with Dan Patrick at Dan Le Batard's wedding, or did you slowly remove yourself, kind of like Homer Simpson back in the hedges in that meme?
So Chris and I are standing next to each other. We're a tag team, you know, duo in this venture of going to talk to Dan Patrick. So as we're there talking to him, we're kind of chit-chatting back and forth. Stugatz is there. We're making fun. And then I see Chris starting to run out of material, and that's when he starts glancing over, sees a couple oranges, and says, you know what? I can go over here, and hey, Dan Patrick, look what I can do. At that point, I start kind of like moving away, and Stugatz and I start walking towards something else. So at one point, it's Chris and Dan Patrick side by side, him juggling, and Dan Patrick just watching him juggle for about 10 seconds.
He was impressed.
In Chris's defense, if I remember correctly, one, it didn't go well because he had just taken a shot and that was not his only alcoholic consumption of the night.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly, Dan Patrick seemed to enjoy it. He seemed to be amused, and I think that others may have also tried to juggle after Chris did so unsuccessfully.
I think Dan is off air now, right now. Can we? We got 45 minutes to make this happen. It's a big ask. I almost feel like at some point, I'll text McLovin. That's my only connection to that. I feel like we need to see if someone asked Dan Patrick, would he remember someone, one Chris Cody, actually juggling at said wedding.
100% he would. 100% he would.
So I have another thing, too, that he might remember, because I have a very distinct haircut when I do get my haircut. Obviously, during the quarantine, we've been having a little bit more of a difficulty with the haircuts. But what I do is basically I keep my hair long on the sides, and then I have it short on the bottom. So at that point, Dan Patrick said, look at this guy's hair. You guys let him do this. So I think that might trigger his memory a little bit, too.
More okay. So than the juggling. Okay. Yeah. I just love that this
then
whole
Chris
story.
Chris Cody having two balls in one hand and juggling. That it's
this
here.
Whole story I'm was looking... prefaced with, I think, and if I can remember correctly, okay. And this is hazy and all of the details.
Oh, I'm going to find this video of me juggling for Dan Patrick, and I will show
it's on
guys.
Video? It's on
well,
video.
Of course it is.
It's on video.
You got a kiss
My
on
wife,
your
I was
picture.
Like, you better get this. I was like, honey, get this.
Oh, my. We're taking a break. Find the video. This needs to be out on the Levitard Twitter account. That is happening right now. Yes.
What did your wife say? Did you say, honey, get this, and you made her film?
She generally is embarrassed by me in public events like that.
Okay, just as long as we're all on the
honey,
same page.
Honey, get the video out. I'm going to juggle for Dan Patrick at Dan Levitard's wedding. And the only thing sadder than that is the fact that your wife at some point goes, okay, sweetie, I will do that. Thank you, Chris Content. Peter Burns, Katie George, I don't know where the hell we're going next here on the Dan Levitard Show. Welcome back, Levitard Show with Stu Gatz, Peter Burns, Katie George, and all week with you. You can follow us on Twitter, Katie_George05, myself at Peter Burns ESPN. Remember, guests on the Dan Levitard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Katie George now has a SportsCenter update.
Well, Pete, Steven Jackson apologized Wednesday night for using what he said were the wrong words in defending DeSean Jackson, but the former NBA player told CNN that what he said a day earlier should not be misinterpreted as support for anti-Semitism. Amazon announced on Wednesday that it will be removing Washington Redskins merchandise for sale while the team considers a name change. And finally, several studies have found that consuming an alcoholic beverage with a meal can protect you against food poisoning. These days, it's good to be prepared, and that includes your vehicle. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing, installation with no appointment needed, and also curbside pickup on any order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See store for details. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Thank you, Katie George. Peter Burns here on the Levitard Show. This just crossing my timeline right now that NFL teams in this upcoming season, if there is one, Katie, will be forbidden from post-game interactions within 6 feet of each other, and jersey exchanges between players will be prohibited during the 2020 season. Makes perfect sense, right? These guys play football for 60 minutes, blood, sweat, tears, fighting for every inch. Whistle ends, game is at zeros on the scoreboard. Everybody back 6 feet away. Like everybody, we've just played a game of football, and now the NFL's like, well, we're going to have to ban the post-game jersey exchanges. Richard Sherman's already in here saying, quote, this is a perfect example of NFL thinking in a nutshell. Players can go engage in a full contact game and do it safely. However, it is deemed unsafe for them to exchange jerseys after said game. What are we doing here, Katie? I mean, like, are we just putting rules to pacify people and just put Band-Aids on to make people feel better about what's happening? I'm trying to figure out why the hell the NFL would even put something together like this. Like, I didn't know this was a game changer for the NFL.
Well, I would imagine they're trying to limit contact and interaction as much as possible. I agree with you that it seems, I don't want to use the word stupid, but that's the only word coming to me at this point. But I'll do you one better. This, to me, feels like a headline. Chris, Content Chris, coming in here, had sent us that Japan, the country of Japan, their theme parks have banned screaming on roller coasters because it spreads the coronavirus. And they have asked citizens who are going to come to the theme park to please scream, this is a quote, please scream inside your heart, just not out loud because that would spread the coronavirus. But yet we'll sit you right next to each other as you fly upside down and take all these spins.
You're 6 inches away on the roller coaster, but no screaming. Scream Inside Your Heart sounds like a great emo band. Like at least like their first release, like that's the one that they really, like before they made it big, and your favorite emo band would do some kind of goth scream inside your heart. I do feel like that's the case. Like, listen, we see it. I mean, the idea, the Kansas City Chiefs just came out yesterday and said, hey, we're preparing for roughly 20,000 people. Baltimore Ravens said exactly the same thing. South Carolina football, who normally over at Williams-Brice Stadium, they can get close to 85,000 people, 80,000 fans, Gamecock fans in their stadium. Ray Tanner says probably looking at about 19,000, 20,000. I saw the MLS tournament is back. MLS's back tournament that's been on over at ESPN. It's fun to watch, and it's a little different with no fans. I mean, it's like you're watching a scrimmage. I'm just trying to think, Katie, what games and what events are we going to be okay with not having sports? Like, I think NBA is going to be fascinating. If you get everybody mic'd up, you'll hear a little bit more of the trash talk.
You're saying not having sound? Like, what sports are you going to be okay watching without the sound?
Yeah, because I, you know, different people have talked about, you know, pumping in some type of sound, and I'm fine with that, but I don't want that to be done for an NBA game. Like I want to hear the sneakers squeaking. I want to hear LeBron talking trash. I want to hear whatever the hell J.R. Smith's going to say, because you never. I want to hear LeBron and J.R. Smith, frankly. Dwight Howard trying to figure it out as well too. Like I'm kind of in. I mean, you cover the Bucks for the longest time, like. The game of basketball, being able to hear it up close and personal, is different than I think any other game, because you do get a chance to feel the insight of players a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw that with the UFC. I think they were the first back. That's what Dana White had pledged to be, the first league or entity back in the realm of sports. And we talked on The Best Week Ever how interesting that was to actually hear what was being said ringside during these fights. And then we saw the Bundesliga come out and start games, and you could hear, now granted, I'm not fluent in German, but you could hear athletes yelling and talking to one another. That was fascinating. Now, they did end up going to pump in crowd noise. I kind of wish they had kept it as is, and we could just hear what was being said and how players were getting upset, yelling at refs and whatnot. And that, to me, is fascinating. Like, if there's a silver lining of how bizarre everything is and what this new normal is supposed to be, I agree with you. I want to hear what NBA players are saying. Like, we're watching the MLS right now, and I've had it on mute this entire time as they were playing earlier on in the show. But can you hear what's being said? Like, that to me fascinates me. I know MLB players had talked about, hey, if we're going to do this, why don't we mic us up? Like, let the fans actually hear some kind of realistic stuff that goes down during our games. Like, I love that. I don't know if that's something that will be considered moving forward if we do get back to our old normal. But for right now, I'm interested in it, and I think it adds value.
Yeah, she's Katie George. Follow her on Twitter at Katie_George05. Myself at Peter Burns ESPN. And you nailed it, Katie. Like, this is a free year. This is your mulligan year in sports. If you're the NBA, you've got a closed season. Mic guys up. Have some fun with it. If you're the PGA Tour, you could do exactly the same. Like, this is the year. Like, Major League Baseball's trying stuff. Like, get weird. Get weird on all of this. To think that, to try to go into this pandemic and the fact that you're not going to probably have fans at a lot of places, you're just trying to get the games played. If ever a year you were like, we're going to go with some different rules, this will be the year. This would be the year that you would try everything different. And it's interesting how some of these teams and some of these leagues have embraced it, and some of them have not. Real quick, around the team here, Chris, what sport still works without sound? Of the major sports right now, which one, if you're not having fans in there, you're not going to lose any bit, any luster?
Outside of the Ryder Cup, golf.
I think golf, right?
That's a good one.
I feel golf. Like, we've had tournaments. It's weird whenever you see Bryson DeChambeau, you know, sink the putt to win the tournament, and nobody says anything. There's not no oohs or ahs, but yeah, I think that works. Tony, what are you taking?
I think anything tennis-wise, all the majors in tennis, you could do without fans too.
It's a really good point, because they're silencing you anyways, but you just hear the clapping after. So, silence. Silence.
Billy, non-steroid user Billy, here on the show, we found out earlier, uses steroids from a convenience store on like a 7-Eleven. Yes.
I mean, I don't want to take shots, but I'm a fan of a baseball team that doesn't draw very well, so I don't think that a lot of, you know, baseball games would change that much because there's lots of poorly attended teams.
I do wonder if people have talked to, like, Florida Marlin fans or, like, at some point and Florida Marlin players and be like, hey, how is it playing with no fans? Like, what do we need to be prepared for? Like, I feel like there should be, like, a conference call where everyone's like, we're not going to have anybody fans. What do we need to expect, Billy?
That's one of those things that oddly, like, triggers me and sets me off is when, like, former Marlins leave and go to, like, teams that, like, the last one that I can remember doing was Derek Dietrich went to Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has, you know, like, they have, like, that parade on opening day, and they, like, love baseball in Cincinnati, right? And it just really bothers me when former Marlins players take shots at the fans because, and this is, you know, an irrational thing that shouldn't upset me as a grown adult, but it upsets me because I think, you know whose feelings you're really hurting, Derek Dietrich's of the world? You're hurting the feelings of the people that are actually at the game supporting you, that are like looking around hoping that other people will come. Because the other ones, they don't care and they're not listening right to this criticism. So you're really just crapping on the actual fans.
So do you think then, Billy, that the 4,000 fans at L.A. Charger games were offended when Melvin Gordon said he was prepared to play without fans this fall?
100%. And as a fan and someone who, you know, I don't love crowds of people, I got to be honest with you. Watching a game without a ton of fans, very enjoyable. If I could just kick up my feet and I know there's not going to be anyone around me, I can have them up on the row in front of me, spread out. It's a really enjoyable experience. And if you want to get souvenirs, oh, very easy to get foul balls.
No convenience, you know, whenever you're trying to get your concessions, there's no lines, no bathrooms. Again, maybe I shouldn't be an LSU football fan. Maybe I should be a Miami Hurricane fan where they don't have a whole lot of fans going to the games.
Whoa, they have. I've been to a game.
Whoa. Yeah, maybe just an ACC football fan in general. Maybe I should be a Wake Forest fan because that way there's nobody ever at the games.
Now you're just being offensive.
No. By the way, $2 fine for me. I said Florida Marlins instead of Miami Marlins. Put it in the jar. Peter Burns, Katie George coming up. Did we get by 28.5% approval rating? I don't think so. That next, the Levitard Show.